This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
You're listening to Green Trails, an environment podcast series where we hit the ground outdoors. I'm your host, Ang Ting. In Green Trails, we will take you to spaces that are critical to climate change, pollution, and biodiversity loss. Three interlinked crises that our planet faces. At these sites, we will learn more about the role that these areas play from experts. For this episode, we will be zooming in on migratory birds. In mid-February, the United Nations released a sobering report about the declining numbers of migratory animals due to overexploitation and habitat loss. Several countries like Singapore have protected these species by shielding known stopover points in their migratory routes. Migratory birds here at Singapore's Sungai Buloh Wetland Reserve have flown halfway across the globe to escape from the harsh winters in the Arctic and North America. Singapore is a layover point for them to refuel. So in this episode, we are joined by enthusiasts who have been bird watching since the 2000s. They belong to Singapore's oldest non-government organisation. Here's Veronica and Kim Cheong from Nature Society Singapore's Bird Group. Good to have both of you today.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Right, so shall we head right into Buloh?
Let's go.
I think we're in luck, you know. There's some birds over there.
Oh, what could they be? Like, generally, like shorebirds?
They are shorebirds.
And where did they arrive from? Are they are migratory birds too, I presume?
Yeah, they are migratory birds. They come from as far north as the tundra regions. Siberia, Alaska, Russia, China. So they'll fly down here during the winter months.
And they are heading back now?
Yeah, they should be heading back already.
Yeah, some of them are still trying to fatten up before making their journey back to the north.
Oh, when you say fatten up, I guess, like, is it because Singapore is a good place for like food that they find? Or yeah, what do you, can you like expand more on that?
Oh, so basically, if they winter here, they are spending time finding sustenance to get going, keep them alive. And then if they're passing through, they rest here for a few days to refuel, to consume food, to build up the fat so that they can undertake the long migration.
Yeah. Right. So what makes Sungai Buloh so special then? Okay. Why not other parts of Singapore? Why do they come here especially?
Okay, Singapore has lost a lot of the original habitats, including mudflat areas like this. Yeah, so this is one of the last remaining areas where there's expansive mudflats where it can support a large population of birds. Yeah, that's why it's attractive for them. So a lot of them congregate here precisely because of that they can find food over here.
Right. Sorry, it seems like the birds were having a conversation over there. Yeah. Are they like fighting?
I think they are. It's just territorial. Yes. Yeah. Probably over the food also, yeah.
We've talked a lot about the different species, right? So what makes migratory birds so interesting to observe?
Personally for me, when you see a big flock of birds coming in, the formation of the birds, it is very spectacular. When you see the leader leading a whole flock of birds settling onto the mudflats, that's very interesting. And also because some of these birds, they are tagged with flags, coloured flags. So at Sungai Buloh, what they have is actually the green over white flags. And that's interesting because sometimes there'll be other birds that are flagged in other countries that might come into Singapore. So it's very interesting to observe these because the birds, you know that they actually came from another country, tagged from another country, and people are actually monitoring the movement of the bird.
And for Kim Cheong, I mean for you, what do you find interesting?
It's like friends you haven't seen for 6 months. So when they come, you know, it's nice to go and meet them again. Observe them, look at their nice features, and it's also like something like the seasons. You know, when it's autumn, you look forward to looking at the autumn leaves. So during the fall or autumn migration, you look forward to welcoming them back to Singapore again.
Right.
Of course, when they arrive here, it's actually the non-breeding plumage, so it's very dull in colour. But once it starts the breeding season, you can see the change in colour, and that's also very beautiful.
Oh, so we can see the change here as well?
Not really. Maybe some of them, you know, like maybe the godwits, but they're not seen here. They're seen at Chek Jawa, actually. Yeah, so you can see some change in colour. The plumage become more reddish.
Ah, okay.
But so far, red shanks, they do present some change in plumage colour as well, but it's not very obvious.
When you say change, I guess, what colours do they...
Brighter colours, red, like, you know, very vibrant red on their legs.
Mm. Is that quite why it's called reaching?
Perhaps, yeah.
Yes, correct, yeah. Yes.
So maybe let's move to another spot and we can talk as we go. So you all say that you all come here, I guess, pretty frequently compared to the common folk. But I guess, are there any particular spots that are good for, that people should know about when coming to Sungai Buloh? Like, which spots are best for spotting migratory birds?
Actually, it depends on where the mud flats are not so flooded. So like in this case, I think this is a good spot. And another spot I think would be at the, what's that one? Platform 1, is it? Over there?
Yes.
Platform 1, which is over the other side.
And right now we're heading to platform...
This is the main height.
Yeah. Main height is good because the birds can be very near, so you can observe them very closely. Yeah.
There are two other heights. Height, I think it's 1C and 1D, where you can actually see the birds as well.
But main height is good because they can come up toward you? Or?
Yes.
And it's spacious also. And plus, you don't have to walk too far.
Yeah, that's the thing. Don't walk too far.
Yeah, then the one walking on the left, that's the red shank. It's smaller. You can see the size difference. And those making the flapping sound, that is washing their feathers, that's a windbrow also. So they use this time during high tide to rest here and to preen and clean their feathers.
So they're actually showering, is it?
Yes.
Bathing.
Yeah.
Bathing.
Yeah, washing their feathers to make sure that they are clean and can function well in flight.
So how does the number of migratory bird species we see today compare to what you have observed over the years?
For me, I feel that it has decreased. And I don't see the numbers, like say example, the red shanks and even the green shanks and marsh sandpipers, don't see them in numbers as compared to the past, let's say in 2015, 2014. So I would say there is some changes.
Right, and for you, Kim Pyo?
Previously, we had other good areas like Sungai Serangoon, also huge expanse of mudflats, lots of big flocks. We have lost that area. So now this is the only area where we have this kind of flocks of shorebirds. But if we talk about a long-term trend since like 30 years until now, there's generally a decline for most birds. It's not just a local problem, but actually a problem all along the East Asian-Australasian flyway, where the birds face a lot of threats, hence the decline in their numbers.
So could there be like a future where there might be much fewer birds than what we see?
I think it's a possibility if, let's say, nothing is done to sort of conserve the areas that the birds roost and feed. So constant monitoring, constant protection of the place, maintain it.
So it's nearly the end of the migratory bird season, which runs from September to March. What are some notable bird sightings that you have observed this season?
This season, we've seen the Asian Darwisher, ruddy turnstone, as well as the broad-billed sandpiper right here at Sungai Buloh Wetland Reserve. And elsewhere in Singapore, we also had rare birds like the blue rock thrush, the tufted duck, black-headed gull, and other birds like tiger flycatcher and oriental turtle dove.
So I think earlier on we were talking about how nowadays you see fewer birds as compared to the past. Like, why is that so and what sort of threats do migratory birds face?
When they fly down from the north, I think they face a lot of perils. It's a very arduous journey they have to travel. So they'll face things like weather conditions, and then they also maybe there's some loss of habitat that they're not able to feed at the particular, site, staging site. So when they travel down this few countries from the north to the south, they'll pass by a lot of places like maybe China, Thailand, Malaysia, all the way down to Australia. So I think the sites like in the Yellow Sea, that's where there's a lot of congregation of birds who feed over there. But because of their developments over there in the coastal areas,
Some of the mudflats have already been eroded, I would say, or degraded, which is why probably that affected the number of birds coming down south.
Also, there are other pressures like hunting. Yeah, so the numbers are decreased through human intervention.
You've talked about threats in other parts of the region, but in Singapore, do migratory birds face any key threats as well?
I would say the smaller habitats for them, and also building collision, bird collisions against buildings, yes. These are the most common ones.
Kim Cheong, do you have any thoughts on this?
In the course of Singapore's development, we have lost most of our forests and our natural habitat. So this is Sungai Buloh here is one of the last few habitats for the shorebirds. There are other few other areas like Chek Jawa and smaller beaches. So it's important to protect whatever that is left so that the birds can continue to come here. So because if we lose what is remaining, then the birds will not have a place to feed and we won't see them. Yeah. So the other one, as mentioned, is the building collisions. That every year there will be quite a number of birds lost due to collision with buildings.
And generally, what kind of species collide into buildings in Singapore?
Generally, they are the passerines, like the blue-winged pita, huda pita, and also bitterns, like the black bittern, strength bittern, cinnamon bittern, and also some flycatchers, like yellow rump flycatcher. The study showed that about two-thirds wind up dead. The remaining one-third, they managed to recover after a period of rest and then carry on their journey.
So, I mean, bird collisions has been a continuing issue, would you say that? Or do you think the situation has improved compared to the past when you started trekking?
I think as long as there are buildings, it will continue to be a threat that some of these migratory birds will face. Yeah, so... having said that, there are already guidelines that are out for building owners to take steps to try to minimize the impact of these buildings on birds. And so they can follow those steps to reduce the number of bird building collisions.
But comparing the situation now and when you all started, has there been any improvements? Do you see a drop in the number of birds dying from building collisions, or it's more or less constant?
I think it's fairly constant, yeah. As long as the buildings are there and as long as the birds continue to migrate, and some of these birds, they migrate at night, they depend on lights. So even if the building, they try to switch out the light, there are reflections from nearby buildings also. So it's still an issue, yeah.
So as long as there are buildings, birds will continue to collide to them. So I think just now we were also talking about how, I mean, we're at Sungai Buloh and a lot of planes fly by. So does that scare the birds that are living here or that are migrating and stopping over here? Is that a threat to them or that's actually not so bad?
Yeah, so birds are more visual creatures. So they can recognize the shape of raptors like eagles that may fly over them. And whenever they see an eagle, they'll actually tilt their head to make sure that they can observe the raptor closely. And once in a while, you see like the white-bellied seagull, when they fly past and fly low, the whole flock of shorebirds will take off to avoid being predated upon.
So a plane is not really a threat to them?
Yeah, a plane, usually they hear the sound, but the plane is quite far away, so they don't feel that it's a threat.
So another question I had is that, is there anything that, or common myths about migratory birds that you'll hear about, having been in the field so often, that you wish to debunk? Like common misconceptions that people might have about migratory birds?
A lot of lay people mistake our sunbirds for hummingbirds because see hummingbirds on TV, in the documentaries, but may not have seen a sunbird before, and they look superficially similar. Yeah, so there's a misidentification. And also, over here we have hornbills, but some people mistake them for toucans, whereas toucans only occur in the Americas. Yeah.
So is that something about our public education system, or like? Why do Singaporeans make that sort of misidentification?
I think it's because of media exposure. What we see tend to be more Western bias, you know, like hummingbirds, toucans, even the cartoons, you know. So probably we should have more efforts to educate local people emphasis, on the local kind of birds, like hornbills, how it's different from toucans, like sunbirds, how they're different from hummingbirds.
So I want to come back to another point, I think, Veron, that you mentioned about some birds that look very similar, right, because of their plumage. Why is it important for people to be able to tell the difference between different migratory bird species?
Well, if you want to identify them properly, you want to assign them a proper name, you have to identify them by knowing their features. Otherwise, you can misidentify. And during, let's say, example, during a count, right, a survey, if you mis-ID, let's say, a flock of birds as something else, it will sort of give a wrong numbers, you know, to the bird population for that species. And that will distort the figures.
Right, and we talked about how, I mean, earlier on we talked about how there have been fewer numbers in, I guess, in this day and age. So is there any way to stop this plummeting of migratory birds coming to Singapore?
I think not being too pessimistic, we are not going to say that there's no way. We're just probably saying that we can sort of slow down the process, you know, of seeing this kind of numbers of birds. Because as long as the habitat is there, as long as there's sufficient food source for the birds, they will still come down.
I guess, what role does Singapore play in conserving such migratory birds? And also, in other words, like, what would happen if Sungai Buloh would no longer be around? How would it impact the migratory birds?
Oh, okay. If let's say Sungai Buloh is no longer around, I think the birds will fly further south. So they go past maybe Indonesia to Australia, maybe even all the way down to New Zealand to look for food source. So, but I think Sungai Buloh has been well conserved and protected, so the birds will still be around. I doubt they will actually fly all the way down. Yes, it's gazetted as a nature reserve.
Yeah, but if I mean in an apocalyptic situation, one day because we need housing,
okay,
so
understand.
We decide to build housing here, yes. And I mean this is gone. Yes. Would that affect the migratory bird population in Singapore?
I think it will. I think it will. Yes, it will, because they have to. I mean, it's like when they fly from the north to the south, they're very dehydrated, they're also very low on energy. So if they have to go further down south to look for food, they expend more energy. So in that sense, they would probably not make it, some of them, and they die along the way. So flying further down is no joke. Imagine some of the birds, they fly like 11,000 over kilometers, you know, just to go down south. It's a very long journey. So if everybody, like, you know, every country, they have a proper site, protected site for them to roost, it makes it easier for the birds.
Right. So we've talked about Sungai Buloh, but I mean, apart from the things that we've talked about, is there anything else that you think can be done to protect migratory birds from a Singapore perspective?
Okay, so Sungai Buloh Wetland Reserve, okay, is protected, and we can see all these shorebirds here, but actually we only see them when it's high tide in Singapore, because they use here as a roosting place. And during low tide, they fly to the extensive mudflats as Sungai Mandai mudflats to feed. So that's an important area for them where they can feed and refuel. So if we lose that area, then actually we wouldn't have any birds that are roosting here. Yeah. So it's a good first step that Mandai Mudflats is going to become a nature park. I think the next step will be to make it into a nature reserve, similar to Sungai Buloh Wetland Reserve.
That's an interesting distinction, right, between a nature park and nature reserve that not many people might appreciate. So what's the difference between the two?
Basically, a nature reserve is gazetted, so it receives full protection compared to a nature park.
Right, but full protection, does that mean so by one day law, nature parks can go if, let's say, I don't know, some policymaker decides to change their mind?
Yeah, it's possible. Yes, it's possible. Oh, the otters!
Otters,
oh.
Otters, yeah.
Yeah, this is another area where you can see otters as well. Yeah. Wow, so many! 20, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so if it's gazetted, then you have to go through the process to de-gazette it, which is a much more stringent criteria required.
And actually, Sungai Buloh is quite a special place because initially it wasn't protected at all, right? And Nature Society played a role, I think.
Yeah, so there were some avid bird watchers who actually discovered this place when they saw very large flocks of birds, migratory birds, coming to this place to feed. So that's where they proposed to conserve this place.
Yeah, so initially Sungai Buloh was actually a nature park, then subsequently gazetted as a wetland reserve, a nature reserve. So we think that the way forward would be for the Mandai Ma flats to go through the same process so that they receive the full protection from the law.
What are the sort of next steps they need to go through to get it to become a wetland reserve status? Like, is it just people making a lot of noise and then that's how
I think for most places to be gazetted to be gazetted nature reserve, you need to go through a few things, like maybe doing assessment of the area, like what birds are there around, what other fauna are there, and then sometimes they will have to sort of do a survey like almost every month, that type, you know, to find out what's down there. So if that area is actually filled with birds during, let's say, migratory season or whatsoever, then you know that that place is very productive.
Right, so it's just having people going on the ground, getting boots on the ground
observe. That's how they sort of determine like, if that place is good or not.
And that's kind of how Sungai Bolo was saved us, because a lot of people came here. But for starters, people have to come here in the first place.
Correct.
So thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks, Kim Cheong. And thanks, Veronica. Well, that's a wrap for this first episode on migratory birds. We hope you enjoyed Green Trails. I'm Ang Sing. If you'd like to read our environmental and climate change columns, there are links in our podcast show notes. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Ang Sing.
Thanks for having us, Ang Sing.
Send your feedback to podcast@sbh.com.sg. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or within our Straits Times app. Thanks for listening.